I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Yesterday, Governor Phil Scott unveiled a $400 million immediate relief package for Vermonters who, he acknowledged, are suffering since the COVID-19 pandemic began.
This has been a significant sacrifice for far too many families who've struggled with unemployment, and businesses and entrepreneurs across the state who have seen their world and dreams evaporate right before their eyes through no fault of their own. I know there are too many small business owners who are desperate right now, family businesses that have been around for decades who don't see a path out of the red, new entrepreneurs who just months ago had so much hope and now face a whole new reality. The corner cafes, restaurants, and distilleries, once thriving, now can't pay their rent. Employers who care deeply about their employees facing gut-wrenching decisions on who gets their hours reduced and who is laid off. I know you're all scared, sad, and probably pretty angry.
And so the governor plans to put about a third of the money Vermont has received from the Federal CARES Act into a two-phase relief and recovery plan. This package has to get approval from the state legislature before it can move forward, and it remains to be seen how legislators might want to change the details. But let's take a look at what the governor and his administration have outlined so far. Joining us this hour is Anson Tebbets, Secretary of the Agency of Agriculture, Food and Markets. Secretary Tebbets, nice to have you on the program.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
We're also joined by Ted Brady. Ted Brady is Deputy Secretary for the Agency of Commerce and Community Development, sometimes known as ACCD. Deputy Secretary Brady, nice to have you on the program.
Thanks, Jane. Good to be here.
Before we get into all of the numbers, and there are a lot of them, can we just talk first about how you are assessing the need? There's, you know, $50 million to the dairy sector, which is part of $250 million in grants and loans to businesses and organizations. There's money for housing. There's money for a marketing campaign. So, Secretary Tebbets, in terms of assessing how much money goes to each sector, how did you even think about the need and how you would figure out, you know, what dollar figure might be attached to that?
Yeah, it's a it's easy in some aspects to track how dairy pricing goes, and it goes you know, month to month. It's a bit unique of other industries, though, that the farmer doesn't really know what he's going to get paid until after the delivery of the product, of the milk. So it's about a month behind. But it was pretty clear as things unfolded back in March that markets had dried up. So, you know, the institutions, the colleges, the coffee shops, the restaurants closed up, and that milk had no place to go. So under the federal system, it became quite clear that the supply and the demand was off balance. So, you know, we did see, pockets around the nation, and including Vermont, where you had to dispose of milk that didn't go into a market. So we know the forecast, and the checks have started to arrive for farmers already, and they've already sustained losses. And there's trends in forecasting, economic forecasting. So we know. We kind of know where it's going, and so we base the need on sort of those forecasts and what's happening on the ground right now.
As I mentioned, $50 million going to the dairy sector. It's $40 million direct to farmers and $10 million to processors. What is that $50 million supposed to do? Make everybody whole? Get them to just survive? You know, what's the aim?
Well, it is about survival. We know that, farmers are not going to be able to survive too long under the current situation. So these dollars, and these grant dollars, would be put out to the farm quickly and as soon as we can get them out there, as soon as the legislature, you know, takes a look at the plan. And it would help pay bills. It would help pay grain bills. It would help pay feed and fertilizer. It would help those that buy supplies. It would, you know, pay the vet bill. All those things would be needed. Now, we know that this is probably not going to cover all the losses that they have sustained. We're looking at, you know, some of our modeling that we've done, the average income annual income loss per farm could be as high as $268,000. So it's the losses are substantial. So we know it's not going to make up for the total losses that have been incurred since COVID started.
Deputy Secretary Brady, the $250 million, the largest single chunk of the funding in this package, goes to grants and loans to pay for fixed costs for businesses and organizations. And I believe that $50 million for the dairy sector is sort of nestled within that $250 million total. But how did you assess the need and then who might be eligible to apply for this kind of funding?
Sure. Well, first we looked to our research analysts at the Agency of Commerce, and we said, what is this crisis costing Vermont, and how is it impacting businesses? And he quickly was able to turn around and say, you know, the COVID economic crisis is about $1 billion a month impact on Vermont's economy. It's reducing economic activity in Vermont's economy by $1 billion a month. We then went out to Vermont businesses, and for the last 6 weeks, every time we send a communication out from our agency, we send with it a business impact survey. And we've had thousands of businesses report their actual losses directly to us. And to date, it looks like we're at about, in just reported losses, about $350 million a month. It's an enormous, staggering number. And it shows that the COVID crisis is a healthcare crisis, but it's as much an economic crisis. And it's why we're proposing that about a third of the coronavirus relief fund is dedicated to economic development and rebuilding our economy and giving these businesses a chance to fight back. Because right now, it's hard to see a path forward. And we hope that these grants give them that chance to fight back. It gives us the bridge to be able to, as the governor said yesterday, we're going to survive and then we're going to thrive. This funding is about surviving. We need these businesses to last. We need these businesses to recover. And we're going to give these businesses grants for the first time in my experience in the government, giving businesses direct grants that do not need to be paid back to get moving. As you said, Jane, those fixed costs, mortgages, insurance, the payment on the truck, you go down a long list of things, even though there's no business and even though they're not perhaps paying the same payroll, they still have to make those payments. And the existing federal and state programs that exist haven't met that need.
When you say you think about a third of the coronavirus relief money should go to this economic sector, you mean about a third of the federal money coming from the CARES Act to Vermont?
Right. That $1.25 billion that our congressional delegation fought so hard for, that without, we wouldn't have a chance to put up the healthcare system that AHS and our healthcare partners have put up, and we wouldn't have a chance to fight back economically. But thanks to that $1.25 billion from the feds, I think we have a fighting chance.
All right. And so as we're talking about this, $250 million within the $400 million aid package would go to pay the bills for businesses and organizations that are really struggling. And that includes about $150 million for restart grants for the food, accommodation, retail and ag sectors, which is where the $50 million earmark for dairy is. $80 million in economic injury and disaster grants or low-interest loans to businesses who don't get restart grants, and $20 million for microbusinesses, small businesses, and nonprofits. Does that all sound right, Ted Brady?
That sounds spot on.
Excellent.
Our plan is to immediately get these payments out within weeks of passage, to get payments out to those that closed first and those that are going to open last, the food and restaurant businesses, the lodging accommodation businesses, and the retail businesses, because we have mechanisms in state government to figure out how much money they've lost because they pay quarterly sales tax. Other industries, the creative economy, nonprofit organizations, manufacturing, professional services, hair and salons, we have a process through the Vermont Economic Development Authority that we've laid out and through our nonprofit lenders around the entire state that we're going to build a network so robust that we're going to be able to get the money out as quickly as possible. And businesses will need to demonstrate need, that they have an unmet need, and they'll have to demonstrate what other resources they've gotten so that we don't duplicate those resources. But other than that, it's going to be an incredibly easy system.
Well, I mean, already that doesn't sound super easy, right? Because of what I was hearing yesterday, I mean, doable, but not like, you know, snap your fingers and the money is in your bank account. What I was hearing yesterday is that these grants are going to be disseminated based on tax filings. Are those the quarterly sales tax filings, or were those tax filings from previous sectors? I mean, how are you deciding that and determining?
Sure. The largest piece of this money, the emergency action grants that go to those three sectors, to restaurants, lodging, and retailers, those will be calculated based on sales tax that those businesses have historically paid into the fund over the last several years. And we're able to then calculate roughly what their typical fixed costs would be. And using that formula, we'll be able to send out payments very quickly. We'll need to ask these businesses to ask for the money and to certify that they need the money. But other than that, that will be a relatively easy system compared to how so many other things in government work. And we're actually quite confident that this can happen within a few weeks of passage.
But, I mean, even some of the other sectors that we're expecting to get state money, like the childcare sector, when we did a show on childcare centers that were working and expecting stabilization money from the state, that were saying, you know, several weeks into this, they still hadn't received the money from the state. Why should small businesses trust that once the legislature passes this package, as you say, Ted Brady, it's a matter of a couple of weeks till they get that money?
Sure, because we've come up and we've been working on for the last several weeks on a plan that is executable and that will avoid any pitfalls that any other program has had. So we've had time to consider this. We've had time to put in place a system. We're able to anticipate the problems. So much of what we've done in the past 2 months has been responsive. We've had to respond to crisis in real time, within hours. We're putting together a thoughtful package. And I should say, it's a thoughtful package that isn't happening in other states. Governor Scott is committed to work with the legislature on how to spend this $1.25 billion. In other states, the governors are putting that money out right away. And we're working with the legislature because we think the best process is to vet that process. We're vetting our idea. We're making sure the idea is a good one, and we're asking for the people's input to make sure it's a good one, while putting forward a really comprehensive proposal.
And let's go to Joe, who's on the line from Burlington. Hi, Joe.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick comment. I just wanted to say kind of kudos to what's happening. I think the approach of grants over loans is pretty incredible, forward thinking. And I think part of the issues that we've seen is with this economic downturn is loans don't necessarily help out a ton when they come due after the crisis sort of subsides. And I think the grant approach is much more holistic and forward-looking and just helpful, to be honest. So I just want to say kudos to that approach.
Joe, can I ask you, are you sort of looking at this package as an observer, or are you somebody who thinks you might need to benefit from it?
I will not. No, I mean, other than just loving the communities within which I live, I won't directly benefit, no.
Yeah, well, thanks for calling in. Thanks for sharing your perspective. I appreciate that. We got a note from Aaron who says, why aren't dairy farm workers without documentation included in this relief package? They haven't been able to receive any stimulus money due to their immigration status, and we depend on these workers to milk our cows here in Vermont. They are, quote, essential workers with zero relief or help from the government during this global pandemic. How can we support these essential workers in Vermont? Secretary Tebbets, this came up in the press conference yesterday. VPR's Pete Hirschfeld asked a similar question, and the response was from the administration, basically, yes, these are essential workers. They are essential to keep in the workforce and to support. Maybe farmers who are getting this direct aid can give some to their workers, but there doesn't appear to be any money earmarked for farm workers who heretofore have not gotten any kind of relief or aid. Why not?
There are discussions outside this particular bill, because I know we've had discussions with the Agency of Administration. So there have been discussions about that. It's just not in this particular program, but I know there's been constructive conversations with the Agency of Administration, also with lawmakers. Our team at the Agency of Agriculture has participated in some of those conversations. So I wouldn't say that it's not going to happen. I would just say it's in another form that hasn't gotten to the next step yet, but there are, I think, really constructive conversations going about trying to address that issue.
Well, while we're talking about it, let's go to Coco, who's calling in from Lincoln. Hi, Coco. Hi, Coco.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we've got you now. Go right ahead.
Great. I'm calling because, you know, I see that there's $50 million in economic relief to the dairy industry, but no direct support for dairy workers or other immigrant workers who've been left out of all the aid packages to date. I think Vermont can do better, and I'm wondering what we can do to support our immigrant workers and our dairy workers in this state. And I'll take the comments off air.
Thanks, Coco. Yeah, that's just what we were talking about. And Secretary Tebbets, you know, I'm curious to know when you say there are conversations happening outside of this package, you know, and it doesn't sound like you have them fully formulated, but how would you even know how to get money to undocumented workers?
Well, that's those are part of the discussions, and I think that's doable. I think we can figure out a path, and I know that there's a lot of people, you know, trying to do a comprehensive approach here, talking about workers. So I think there is a path to do that. UVM Extension has a program, and they've been part of those conversations that we've had with them as well. So I think there's a path. It's just that we're gonna just have to address it as it works its way through the legislature over the next few weeks.
What would the path be, though? Would you work with nonprofit organizations to identify workers? I mean, there may be people who are really uncomfortable coming forward to the state government. And if we're talking about federal money, which you may or may not be talking about, that's attached, I would imagine you could run afoul of the presidential administration's wishes for that money.
Yeah, those are all great thoughts and questions. And I think that we are trying to, you know, get this right and try to figure this out. But I know there's been positive discussions with the legislature and the administration about trying to get through this.
Let's talk just briefly about the I think it's $5 million that's being allocated, of course, assuming this proposal goes through as it's currently written, for technical assistance, the Vermont Restart Vermont Recovery Guides and Employee Assistance Programs. Ted Brady, can you talk a little bit about that? Because it was interesting in the press conference yesterday. I can't remember who said it. It might have been Commissioner Goldstein, who was saying, you know, a lot of Vermont's small businesses and organizations don't necessarily have a dedicated staff member who knows this side of the accounting ledger or who fully understands the legal issues that their organization might be facing right now. And so some of the money is actually going to be earmarked to figuring out how to help organizations actually get through this. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Thanks. You know, businesses are really good at running their business, and they know how to run a business a certain way. And sometimes they need somebody to come in and help them look at things a little differently. So when you take a retailer who has done an incredible job, a downtown retailer, in running a downtown shop, and perhaps they're doing some online, but a majority of the traffic still foot traffic, how do we help them transition into a more online economy so that they can better balance those revenues so that in the event this returns in the fall, or in the event you have another future circumstance, or just to make that company stronger, make them thrive, could you provide them additional online retail resources? In Montpelier currently, they've hired a recovery navigator for their downtown businesses, so that if you work in Montpelier and you need access to these federal funds, if you need access to an accountant, you can go to that recovery navigator, and that recovery navigator is helping these businesses find these tools and find these resources. Ultimately, you know, giving financing to a business is only part of the solution. We need to give new tools. I think you see it in the restaurant industry. You see some restaurants hitting it out of the park with takeout. They're doing an incredible job of adapting to what they have to do to survive. Some businesses don't have those tools. Maybe it's because they don't have the right point of sale system. Maybe it's because they don't have the expertise in the house, actually, how to deliver good quality, fresh tasting food takeout. Those are the kind of things we want to give resources to. Or as Commissioner Goldstein said, sometimes it's just you need a deeper level of financial assistance to try to relook at your books and have somebody come in looking from the outside.
Deputy Secretary, you mentioned that Montpelier has a guide that's been hired to sort of help community organizations and businesses there navigate through all of this. There, as far as I can tell, in the at least in the initial $310 million that's supposed to go out fairly immediately, there isn't any money that's earmarked specifically for municipalities to do that kind of thing, you know, not on their own, but to do that in a state-funded way. Is that because the federal money couldn't be used for that kind of thing, or it was just a different approach taken by the administration?
Sure. I think it's because this is an economic mitigation package, and we're trying to really target the assistance at the job creators in the private sector and in the nonprofit sector. The municipal sector is suffering as well. And don't get me wrong, they're going to need assistance. And when we put out the RFP for the technical assistance providers, there's a chance that there could be somebody that comes to us and says, this is what we need. But right now we see the greatest need and the greatest way to help a municipality is to make sure there's tax revenue in future years. And if we don't invest money into these businesses immediately, if we don't make sure they survive and thrive, next year we're going to be in a worse situation because tax revenues are going to be down. Towns are going to be faced with another nightmarish 2021. Which we need to avoid, and we think this package will do that.
Let's go to Dave, who's on the line with us from Greensboro. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because our agricultural businesses in the Northeast Kingdom depend on tourists from Boston, New York, and Montreal to promote and market and sell our products. But our lodges and inns are in lockdown right now, and we don't see any light at the end of the tunnel. Is there any discussion about what we're going to be able to do to bring the kind of people from these urban areas that buy our products and that promote and help us market our products?
Ted Brady, let me start with you, and then I want to go to Secretary Tebbets on this as well. Go right ahead, Ted.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. This has been the hardest thing, looking at our tourism economy this summer and going into the fall and questioning what does it look like. And I have to be clear, we're working on it every day to try to imagine it. We reopened lodging properties they reopen actually tomorrow on the 22nd at 25% capacity for Vermonters only and those that have met the quarantine requirements. We know that's not enough. That's not enough to make these lodging properties thrive. And if the lodging properties aren't working, we get it. The events venues, the agritourism, all of those things are suffering as well. So we're working with the Department of Health, we're working with the Department of Public Safety, and we're trying to find a way to chart a course for what it looks like to invite people from the region to come to Vermont again. But we're not there yet. We're simply not there. There are 1,000 new cases in Massachusetts a day, last week. There are still double-digit death rates in Massachusetts. That's our market. Those are the people that come to Vermont, and we're not at a point to open yet, which is really, really difficult to say.
So given that there is a $5 million tourism marketing campaign that's included in this proposal, and Secretary Tebbets, this would be geared at in-state tourism. So it sounds like, you know, suggesting to Vermonters, hey, you might want to check out this part of the state that you've never seen, or here's some great, you know, to Greensboro, to Dave's point, here's some great B&Bs and agritourism you can do in your own state. Just go to Greensboro for it if you live in Brattleboro or if you live in Burlington. What's the thinking behind that, given that we see something like 35% of the workforce still applying or currently accessing unemployment? You know, is a $5 million in-state tourism campaign really going to give us what we need to keep tourism alive this summer?
Well, we're all going to have to be really creative, and we're all going to have to, you know, reach deep down and think about these things. And we know that because of unemployment and the uncertain future a lot of people have in their income, what can they do to help? I think the governor said it, you know, beautifully yesterday. Now is the time we really got to think about, you know, taking care of our neighbors, buying local, and we're going to have to do that. If you look at marketing, you know, most of these companies, you know, and you know, anyone that's been around running companies or been around working for a firm, usually the first thing that's cut is the marketing budget. And that's one of those expenses that has to go away really quickly. So I think having a focused Vermont-based marketing campaign, essentially Vermont's going to have to take over some of the responsibilities of those of individual firms and businesses to do that. So they're going to have, we're going to have to say, hey, look, if you haven't been to Island Pond lately and you live down in Bennington, maybe it's time to go up and see Island Pond and stay at a agritourism place or a bed and breakfast or a hotel. And maybe you live in Northeast Kingdom, but you haven't really visited southern Vermont in a long time. The great thing about Vermont is you've got 14 counties, and every single county is different. Every county is special. And so it's an opportunity. Maybe we need just to rediscover what's around us a little bit. And we know that it's going to be a struggle, and we understand that it's going to be really difficult for people to get through this. But we've got to try. As Ted said, it's about survival. It's the survival of our farms, the survival of our tourism and our neighbors. But we're going to go down fighting for a chance to get to the next day.
When we think about moving around even within the state, I know restrictions have been relaxed, so we don't have a prohibition on going beyond 10 miles for outdoor recreation, for example. Nonetheless, we expect to see a surge in cases as things open up. And we know that, you know, if you look at the population density of Chittenden County, not only is a lot of the wealth concentrated there, but so are a lot of the COVID-19 cases. And so, you know, what's the thinking, the health thinking, as we also consider a marketing campaign in asking Vermonters to move around significantly this summer as we're also trying to monitor a potential surge in cases, Secretary Tebbets?
I think, you know, we've got to follow the guidelines. We got to be safe. We've got to, you know, continue to, you know, to wash our hands, keep our distances, you know, not big gatherings, just the sort of the stuff that we've been forced to think about. We've never had to think about before, but we've really got to be focused on that. We know to some of those businesses, there's going to be added expenses of that. We're going to have fewer people in our in our establishments because of that. So it's going to be creative, but we've got to use those safe practices that we're getting used to it now. In the beginning, not very many people wearing masks. Now you go around and you see a lot of people, you know, wearing their masks and doing those things, and continue to have your sanitizer on hand and continue to wash your hands and do all those things. It's going to become the norm here for a while, and I think as we go along with this, I think more people will be comfortable, and we'll just, you know, we'll stay close to the health department and make sure that we follow their guidance and we can get to the next level.
Let's go to John, who's calling in from Royalton. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon. I have a question on businesses and having to pay rent or pay on their auto loans and stuff like that. Why hasn't the government put a mandate out there to put a hold on those kind of payments while this crisis is still going on? The banks have gotten quite a bit of money from the government to support them. Why don't we support the smaller guy?
John, let me ask you before we get an answer to your question from Deputy Secretary Brady on something like rent. You know, you mentioned the banks, but often if you're paying rent, it is not to, it's not to a bank. It's to a person who owns the building. And sometimes that's somebody who owns several units, but often it's somebody who owns one unit or one home or a couple of apartments. And this is actually income that they rely on. So when you think about, John, the idea of putting a hold or a pause on things like vehicle payments, rents, mortgages, how would you address the potential loss of revenue for a landlord? What do you think about that, John, when you ask that question?
Well, the same way that we think about the loss to everybody else, it's something that the government has, that they've given out. They've given me $1,200, and I'm retired. I don't really need it, so I donate a lot of it. But we have people that volunteer drive. They buy cars in order to have safe cars. We're not doing it anymore. It's been put on hold. That would be nice if our bank loan would be put on hold. And so we're all going to share in this kind of loss thing until this is over. And that should include people who own buildings. The store owner, he can't open. The people that own the building, what are they going to do? Throw them out?
Yeah, John, I hear what you're saying. And so, Ted Brady, let's address what John's question was first, and then we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back to talk more deeply about the housing assistance provided in this proposal. But, you know, John is saying, why couldn't the government, the state government, mandate a suspension in things like rental payments and vehicle payments and mortgages?
Sure. Every action has a reaction. And right now, our purpose in economic recovery is to help businesses recover, not pass the buck on to the next business in that chain. And we're trying to stop this from getting deeper. So we're proposing to give these businesses direct grants, low interest and no interest loans after those grants to help them survive. I want to give a shout out to the banks too. You know, the banks were the way the government, the federal government distributed billions of dollars across the country to Vermont and other businesses. In Vermont, the SBA and the private banks and credit unions in Vermont issued more than 11,000 loans totaling $1.1 billion in the last 6 weeks. These banks put it all on the line to help, and they are actually providing loan deferments. They're working with customers. We don't have a group of greedy bankers operating here in Vermont. We have community banks that are trying to do the right thing, and we're going to work with them to help businesses.
And so, and the idea on something like the rent, not having a cessation on rent being due, would be that that would then affect the landlord, who would then need to apply for money too. Is that what the thinking?
That's right. It's another business. You're just passing the buck on to the next business in the system. And we need to stop the bleeding, not create more bleeding and not just make somebody else bleed.
Before we get into housing, let's go to Bruce, who's calling in from South Royalton. Hi, Bruce.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call. And thank you for the program. It's very helpful. My question is, we got hit pretty hard at our business by the Irene flood. It just totaled my business. And I was offered a Vita loan, thinking that would be a good thing to do, at low interest. And the interest has continued to climb until it's nearly 8%. And that's been quite a burden now that my business hasn't been able to function. Do you know if there's a possibility of having that Vita loan refinanced or some kind of relief from that?
Bruce, thanks for the question. Deputy Secretary Brady, could you tackle that?
I sure can. Vita has done a really nice job working with its borrowers through this, deferring payments and finding a way to work with borrowers. So if you're a borrower for Vita and you're struggling to make your payments, you should contact Vita and ask exactly that question. Demonstrate your need, demonstrate your struggle, and say, I need some relief. I'm not sure that the existing product would have a refinance option. Our plan is to offer Vita will offer grants based on your fixed costs, fixed expenses that have not been met by other sources. And it would offer up to, right now we're proposing a $150,000 loan at 0% in year one and 2% in year two. And, you know, as the caller's noticing, the idea is that loan rate will slowly go up as we return to normal and your business thrives. If your business isn't thriving, call Vita, work with them, try to find better payment and terms.
All right, Bruce, does that answer your question? Hang on, I'm going to tell our director, Jake. We're going to go back to Bruce here for a second.
Yeah.
Bruce, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think that's helpful, and I think that's wise. I'll just give them a call and see what they can tell me.
Great. Well, Bruce, good luck, and keep us posted. Thanks for that. So let's talk a little bit about housing. This is what we were talking about before the break. And we got a call from a listener who said, why not suspend rent and mortgage payments, maybe vehicle payments as well? That's not in the package. But there is $50 million that's allocated towards housing assistance. The majority of that would go directly to landlords and tenants for up to 3 months of emergency rental relief. And then there's about $8 million to rehab units to help make more permanent housing for homeless Vermonters, many of whom are currently lodged at motels under the voucher system. Let's talk about the rental assistance first. Ted Brady, how is that money being allocated? It sounded like it was going to both landlords and to tenants. I'd love to know a little bit more about how that's going to get dispersed.
Sure. You know, going back to the caller we spoke to just a few moments ago, who was saying, you know, if you just mandate that people can't collect rent or mandate people can't collect payments, you create a problem down the line. So we have an eviction moratorium in place right now. The legislature passed, the governor signed. We have thousands of Vermonters that are struggling to make their monthly payments, their monthly rent payments. And that's resulted in the small business owners that own those properties being in a pickle because they're faced with not making their mortgage payments. And it goes on and on. This program is aimed at preventing homelessness, preventing people from being forced out of their homes because either they can't make rent after this eviction moratorium is over or because that landlord goes belly up and that property goes into disrepair and you end up in a situation of deteriorating housing stock. So our goal is to issue a RFP to the state's housing providers and nonprofit organizations and say, who can help us administer this program? And landlords would go directly to the operation that's managing this money and demonstrate that they had several months, up to 3 months, where they didn't receive their full payments from their residents and that they need some assistance to close that gap because if they don't, they're going to be financially in trouble. And we're looking at it as a way to keep hundreds, if not more, families from being forced out of their homes after this crisis is over and creating that next crisis.
So the money would go then directly to landlords, not to tenants. Is that right?
Correct. That's how this is aimed at those that are housing others. Yep.
If I'm a tenant right now and I'm struggling and I'm listening to this and I hear, you know, first of all, there's an eviction moratorium, but then afterwards, if I'm not paying, my landlord can request money from the state. You know, this, I don't mean to throw shade on anybody in this scenario, but like, what's the incentive for tenants to keep paying and landlords to ask for payment if landlords could get that money from the state without a tenant needing to demonstrate need?
Sure. I think ultimately we're going to be in a position in the next few months where tenants, Vermonters are not going to be able to catch up on 3 to 6 months of rental arrearage. And the obstacle here is going to be in 6 to 9 months when this system catches up to us. We don't want to put those folks in the position where they have to leave their home. And this program is going to prevent them from having to do that. This program is directly aimed exactly at that person who cannot make rent. When you talk about moral hazards and you talk about how you don't incentivize people to make bad decisions, you know, Vermonters are good people. Most people do the right thing. Most people are trying to make their monthly rent payments. It's the last thing they stop doing because they know it puts them in such a precarious position.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be 6 months behind on rent.
Yeah, no, certainly not. Let's go to Scott, who's calling in from Colchester. Hi, Scott. Go right ahead.
How you doing?
Good. How about you?
Not too bad. Hey, a quick question about where's the incentive for people to go back to work when they're making more money on unemployment? And just a follow-up question is, why should we go back 3 months when this has only been going on for 3 months and people are making more money on unemployment? So where are they losing out?
Yeah, I hear your question, Scott. So Ted Brady, I'm going to toss this one back to you again.
Yeah, let's be clear. Nobody's glad they're on unemployment. And we're really fortunate that the pandemic unemployment assistance allows people just a living wage off of unemployment so that they're at least able to cover ends meet, but they're not. This is the problem. You know, $600 a week ultimately for a short period of time doesn't help you capture your mortgage, capture your car payment, capture your health insurance. You go down that long list. In most cases, you're still losing. And especially if you're a small business owner, if you can cover your wages so that you can cover your home mortgage, it doesn't allow you to cover your business mortgage. It doesn't allow you to cover your business expenses. So this is not about trying to say, you know, trying to pit one program against the other. We're going to put measures in place to make sure that nobody is benefiting from this program better than they would have pre-pandemic. The goal is to make people whole.
But that's not entirely true, right? I mean, there are, certainly are people for whom the POA, you know, the assistance for self-employed or independent contractors, that $600 from the federal government is the only money they're getting. For others who were eligible for unemployment benefits under the traditional system, they could be getting up to $500, you know, through the regular program plus the $600. And there are people for whom that's a better living wage than what they were making when they were employed. And, you know, that's a whole other show that we have done and can continue to do on what a living wage is and, you know, whether or not certain jobs are paying that. But for some people, they are actually making more money on this in these unemployment benefits now, right now, at least. So, I mean, there are different cases for different people, right, Deputy Secretary?
Yes, and I hope I didn't say that that wasn't true. What I'm saying is if you're a small business owner that pre this business, you employed five or six people, you know, when you go on unemployment assistance, the chances are that's not covering your business expenses and your personal family expenses. That's the point.
Sort of on the flip side, Mark wrote in to say, what about people? What happened to the hazard pay bill? You know, so the hazard pay bill was designed in conception, at least, to offer some extra money to those who are essential workers and who are making under a certain amount of money. So people like those who are still working in grocery stores and who are really sort of at the front lines of risk but are not making a lot of money and maybe in some cases are those for whom they'd make more money on unemployment if they were laid off or furloughed than they're currently making in their job. So Ted Brady, to Mark's question, what about direct money to those who are working?
Sure. Fair to call it hero pay because these people have been on the front lines and they've done an incredible job keeping parts of our economy open when we had to close down other pieces. That's a separate issue from the targeted relief we're offering here. It's not a unrelated issue and it's not a dismissed issue. We're talking about trying to keep those that employ those people alive and keep those people that employ folks from across the state able to employ them into the future. And so that's what our package is really focused on. It's focused on helping businesses survive and thrive so that they can put people back to work.
Let's just briefly touch on the assistance, $8 million that is earmarked to help those who are homeless get into more stable housing. Secretary Tebbets, can you tackle this or would you prefer I throw it again to Ted Brady?
I think it's probably best suited for the Deputy Secretary.
All right. So, Ted Brady, you know, can you just explain what this money would do?
Sure. Anson would be more interesting answering this question, but I'll give it a shot. Yes. So the goal is we recognize there's about 19,000 units. We did a housing study recently, identified 19,000 units that are in need of significant repair. And some of those units are completely offline because they're in such terrible shape that you can't use them. So this program would provide grants to people who are putting those units back online, create new housing units, we think 250 housing units, so that we can get some of the people who would be homeless otherwise into these units and put these units online for the most vulnerable Vermonters.
And that would help those who are currently using the voucher system perhaps to stay in motels, which, you know, was said yesterday in the press conference is not a sustainable solution.
Correct. And this is not the solution for the hundreds of Vermonters that are in that situation, but it is a solution. It is one way to get people off of homelessness and into long-term sustainable housing.
Well, we're going to leave it there for now, but this proposal still needs to get to the legislature. There may be significant changes. We don't know yet, so we'll keep tracking it, and you can keep listening to VPR for more updates. I want to thank our guests today. Ted Brady is Deputy Secretary for ACCD, the Agency of Commerce and Community Development. Thanks very much for being on the program.
Thanks, Jane.
And Anson Tebbets is Secretary of the Agency of Agriculture, Food, and Markets. Secretary Tebbets, thank you.
Thank you, Jane.